Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the In the Crease Podcast. I am Dan Abern, contributing writer at Inside Lacrosse, joined today by...
I'm Kyle Devitt. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside Lacrosse. Get it up! Get up! Let's go!
Kyle, we are officially in April, and if there's... So I have this idea that there's going to be themes for each month. So February was all about, you know, unexpectedly good weather, good lacrosse. March was just craziness, and I think April is going to be the gauntlet of this season. Remember how last week I said that time was not the time for fear? Now is the time for fear.
Wow.
Especially if you're North Carolina.
Yeah, man. This is the time where all the games count. Not that they didn't count before, but now they count especially. And we're moving into conference play and conference tournaments. And that means we're that much closer to May.
Yes. And we're going to start with a conference game, a very important conference game to open this podcast. Back on Friday night, John Hopkins 12, Rutgers 6. Just a total dominance by Hopkins, really. The tone was set on the first play of the game when Turnbull just absolutely stuffed Henningberg on a fast break. And from that point forward, it was all Hopkins.
It was a Hopkins tone poem of destruction for the entire game.
Yeah. We got to give credit to Dave Petromala because I felt like trust was a theme of this game. He stuck with and he trusted both the two guys who kind of led him to victory in that Virginia win, and Brock Turnbull and Kyle Marr. I thought their play in the first 30 minutes of the game kind of set the tone for the whole contest. So shout out to Petro for going with the hot hands.
Well, it's interesting. So we've talked about how deep Hopkins is. Maybe the issue that they've had in their kind of their three-game skid a couple weeks ago was that they were so deep they couldn't identify the personnel they wanted or that was the most effective because they kind of had to give everyone a run. And now I think we're seeing that chemistry gel. We're seeing, you know, the crystallization of a very regimented and free-scoring offense that knows when to hold and when to shoot.
No, absolutely. I think you're very right. When I looked at it, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I felt like they had an identity at midfield, but I don't think they had an identity at attack. And I know a lot of people were lobbying for like a different attackment to start on line with Shaq and Wilkins Dismuke. A lot of people wanted Forey Smith. A lot of people wanted Cole Williams. And Kyle Marr just comes out and has these two games, and I think he's solidified that third spot. And I think, you know, if you're Hopkins, you know, he's kind of got a similar skill set as two players, you know, in recent years, and Brandon Benn and Zach Palmer, kind of, you know, inside finishers, good from anywhere from 0 to 10 yards of cage. I think he brings a similar skill set. So there's obviously familiarity, you know, working with a Stanwyck. They all kind of have the same skill set. And then a guy like Kyle Marr. So there's familiarity with that kind of offense from Bobby Benson's perspective.
Right. And they're trying to recreate that attackman that can, you know, get free off ball and fireballs, right? And the ultimate guy for that, and maybe one of the ultimate guys in lacrosse in the last, like, what, 5-10 years, is Ryan Brown. Yeah. And I think that that's where they're slotting Marr in. I mean, Ryan Brown in his senior season carried the ball a lot more. But I feel like, you know, seeing Marr play and seeing, you know, Brown basically develop into one of the best shooters in lacrosse right now, like this second, maybe one of the best shooters in lacrosse. I think that's where they're going with Marr. And there's, you know, obviously he's got a lot more time to develop it. He's a little bit of a different player than Brown, but he still has that ability to stick. And I think that's definitely what they were looking for. They were looking for that guy that can catch and finish, right? And I think that Marr does that really well.
Absolutely. He's, you know, love his skill set, and I think he complements another guy who had a great game in this one. We saw the return of awesome Shaq in this game, Shaq Stanwyck with 4 goals, 2 assists. Really kind of, you know, I was really impressed with what I had seen from Rutgers' defense, but he just went off in his isolation dodges in this game.
Yeah, I took a break off from filming Kazam 2 to come in and do some great work. Like watching him play.
Another player I was really impressed with in this game, and he's actually put together, I would say, you know, first-team All-American performances in back-to-back weeks, and that is Nick Fields, because it honestly felt like his matchup in Jules Henningberg just didn't even play in this game. Like, he was held to just an assist on the year, on the game.
Right, and they made a clear effort to zero him out, right? Fields was on his hands immediately. And I think that's what Fields is great at. And I think the problem is when you move him away from the cage, I think he's actually an amazing defender. You're totally right. Below GLE and kind of on the wing. As soon as they move him up, I think that's where he starts to get, you know, guys get too much space on him and he goes for a bump and it's too late. And I think he needs to just kind of settle into that role as the guy that controls the attackman down low and prevents him from doing a lot. There was a lot of not boxing one, but like a lot of shut and adjacent attacking from the Hopkins defense that I think Rutgers was a little surprised to see. And unfortunately didn't work out for the Scarlet Knights there.
Yeah. I mean, there was just, there was no R tempo in this game. It was all, I guess, hop tempo in this one. You know, Hopkins, you know, they got up to the early lead and they pretty much dictated their pace. And we kind of went into this game thinking, oh, whose pace is going to prevail? Is it going to be, you know, the R tempo of Rutgers, or is it going to be the kind of calculated chess match that, you know, the Hopkins staff likes to orchestrate? And we obviously saw that Hopkins tempo prevailed in this one.
You know, it just occurred to me. I know we call Syracuse the House of Assassins.
Okay.
What's the opposite? The natural enemy of an assassin is a thief. There's the Thieves Guild, the Assassins Guild. I feel like this Hopkins team, this Hopkins offense, the Thieves Guild. They just steal away from you in the night. They will steal everything you have. They will take it from you, and they will dominate you as long as they win faceoffs.
That's true. And I think we'd be remiss not to talk about how much of an impact, you know, Hunter Moreland kind of coming back, even if he's not 100%, has positively influenced this team. I mean, I think you can say that there is a correlation. Hunter Moreland plays and Hopkins wins. So obviously him providing them with the possessions that they kind of need, or at least some competitiveness, has really helped this team.
Well, that's what you need when you're playing as a team that tries to control the tempo, right? The only way Absolutely. To do that is take the ball away. And when you have an excellent faceoff guy or a guy that can at least get the ball loose and have the wings battle for it, that's really what you need to beat a team like Rutgers, to beat a team like UVA, Syracuse in certain situations, even Albany, which I don't even think you can beat TD Ireland right now. I think that's kind of impossible. We'll get to that later. But those guys give the high-tempo teams an advantage if they have them, but they are the kryptonite when they play against them.
Oh, yeah. So what did you see specifically from Hopkins that kind of – one thing I noticed in this game was that they just absolutely destroyed their ability to play within the middle of the field and push the tempo. You know, what were you seeing from Hopkins? Because it felt like they just got back and rode hard. Is that what you saw?
Yeah, but I also think they're playing smart, right? They weren't, like, throwing – you know, a ton of checks. And I think that helps to when you're playing a better position on defense and you're denying the middle of the field. I mean, one of the basic tenets of great defense is deny the middle of the field. Don't let anyone get past. I mean, I used to call it the cylinder, which is the edges of the crease, like stretching all the way to the top of the restraining box, kind of just makes like a very convenient middle of the field. If you stop the team from getting to that, to the cylinder, you know, you're doing a great job. The problem with that is when teams can score from the wing, and I thought Rutgers couldn't score from the wing to save their life in this game. And that's a tough ask from a defense to stop that and stop the middle of the field. But if you do one or the other, you actually have a really good chance of winning the game. And I think that's what Hopkins did. Is they really did control the middle of the field. They got back. They rode hard. They also – listen, Hopkins plays a good substitution game, man. That's like not something that we – you know, focus on as an analytics strength. But, you know, there are top teams that are have garbage boxes. I'm not even going to tell you who they are, but it's one of the things that I watch because, again, I used to run a box, and it's hard. It's not easy. Like, you can't let the players run the box. I know, like, they're D1 players. They're all very smart. But, like, you cannot let the players run the box. And I think that that does not happen at Hopkins. You are, the players are not running the box at Hopkins if you watch them. You know what I mean? Like, that would never happen there. But I think that is a strength that's super underrated. And in some games, it doesn't matter. But I feel like you get the right personnel out there as fast as you can. That's what you want to do.
Yeah. So kind of to wrap up this game, but how do we evaluate these two teams going forward? Because, you know, Rutgers, it felt like, you know, just over 2 weeks ago, they were on top of the world, number one team, lose to Delaware, and then kind of fall flat against Hopkins. Where are they right now?
It's lonely at the top of the mountain, and it's even lonelier when you fall all the way to the bottom, right? That's a tough hang. I think for Rutgers, we're looking at their Big Ten performance now. You know, they're in the pocket, and they have to deliver. Yes, they had a great streak to start the year, but these are the games that matter. So they have to suck it up and, you know, go out and kind of recreate the magic they had to get to the point that they were at before this game and before the Delaware game. What do you make of them? Like, you have a note in here that you still think they're really good. Is that?
Yeah, I do.
Is that like really?
I mean, yeah, because I feel like they've put out a better body of work than some of their other Big Ten counterparts, maybe like Ohio State and Penn State. They played, you know, really good teams early in the year, and they were able to blow by them. Like, I was really impressed with their victory over Princeton, and I feel like that's the epitome of what they can do. They can survive a close game and eventually close it out against a high-quality opponent, but we just haven't seen that in the past 2 weeks. You know, I feel like there may be a little bit of a cause for concern amongst the coaching staff, but I feel like Rutgers still on paper is a really good team. I think they just got nipped by a Hopkins team that is quite frankly on the bounce back. You know, I feel like this team is finally finding an identity. And I said this on Saturday or Friday night. I was like, Hopkins is back and Kyle's going to hate me for it.
I don't hate you for it. I think Hopkins is a good team. I just have really minor nitpicks. I just can't stand how everyone loves Hopkins or hates them, right? And it seems like I definitely skew towards hate. I don't actually hate the team. I just feel fine criticizing them like they're a team and not an institution. I don't like that. No team is above criticism. No player is above criticism. I don't ascribe to the Hopkins is a temple philosophy. Like, sorry if that upsets you, but that's not my viewpoint. Like, I want to see, you know, it's funny because it feels like I'm arguing for the math. Well, I'm not really arguing for the math. I never argue for math. I'm arguing for, you know, equal treatment among all the teams. I don't like to be a favorite of the teams. There's teams I like watching play, and Hopkins is an intriguing team. I wouldn't say they're in my top 10 to watch, if that makes any sense.
No, I think they are a good team, but I think you're right. I don't necessarily think that they are maybe as exciting as people would hope.
Right.
All right. Before we move on to what I think is the marquee game of the weekend, we got to give a shout out to our newest sponsor. I am really, really pumped about this. Blue Apron is now a sponsor of all Inside Lacrosse podcasts. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking meals accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. So last week we got, you know, our opportunity to go and kind of shop around for what food we're going to get. And man, I'm really excited for what we're getting next week. I'm getting Zatar spiced chicken, smoky seared catfish, and Spanish style potato and chickpea stew. Now, I love to cook, but I've got to admit, it's really difficult to find time to cook with how crazy things have been this season. So I'm really excited that Blue Apron is going to deliver this to my door. It's kind of ready to go. Make it in less than 40 minutes. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm actually even more excited about the next week's delivery. I'm getting Swiss chard and potato shakshuka. Have you ever had shakshuka, Kyle?
No, don't know what that is.
Do you? It is a, it's like an Israeli dish. It's basically like eggs in a kind of like a tomato sauce kind of mixture. It's delicious.
I'm really just excited for you to eat, man.
Oh, I am too. But anyways, check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with Blue Apron. With free shipping, by the way, by going to blueapron.com/lacrosse. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/lacrosse. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Guys, if you could see Dan's smile reading that ad, you would go buy Blue Apron right now. Because he's so excited to get it. It's not even funny.
I'm really excited, man. My roommates are excited. We're going to be eating good.
What we got up next?
All right. Next game.
Game of the week.
Biggest one of the meeting.
Game of the week.
Game of the week. Syracuse 11, Notre Dame 10. We got to start by saying this. There's no luck to this Syracuse team.
No.
It is a team full of veterans with ice in their veins. Salcido, Mariano, Malloy, they come through in the big moments. They are cold-blooded. What kind of person are they, Kyle?
They're killers.
The House of Assassins.
That's right.
Might as well be like a law firm, you know, Salcido, Mariano, Malloy.
Yeah, a law firm that murders you. It's good. It's good. I like it. I'm into it. Murdering law firm of lacrosse players.
Yes, but once again, Syracuse comes away with yet another one-goal victory. You got to start thinking that all these close games are going to start paying off in ACC play and deep into May.
Start thinking? How long have we been saying it? How long have you been listening to us, listener? How long? How many times do we have to tell you? How many times? Team's for real. I put them number one. I can't believe they're not number one this week.
Yes. I actually wanted to put them as co-number ones along with Penn State in my poll, but I just kind of had to go give Penn State a little bit of credit. You know, they get the bump because of the undefeated. Besides the point, but another thing I want to mention is that Scott Furman, this dude is playing like a first-team All-American so far this year. And he's, you know, Notre Dame's offense runs through Ryder Garnsey, and he shut him down in this game. And, you know, I mentioned this before. Notre Dame's kind of got a lack of depth of scoring, and I thought it was glaringly apparent, especially in that third quarter. And you could actually see there was a moment in the game where Garnsey gets visibly frustrated with how inept his offense is playing. He's pointing at guys, yelling at them, telling them where to go. What were your thoughts?
I don't think they have a lack of scoring. I think they have a lack of initiators and ball carriers. That they trust with the ball. And that's a different thing, right? Because we know that they have guys that can finish. Like, we know that. We know Mikey Wynn can finish. Like, we know that. That's not a mystery. We know Sergio Perkovic, where he likes to shoot, how he gets the shot off, where he likes to get the ball. I think that they need to utilize more of what they did in the fourth quarter that solve their offensive woes. And by the way, they didn't have the ball a lot, so it's kind of hard to score when you don't have the ball. Yeah. I thought that I'm kind of on the other end of the spectrum with, like, this was a bad performance. Like, people are saying it's a bad performance by Notre Dame. I don't think it was bad. Yeah. I really don't. I just think Syracuse is really good.
Yeah.
At one point, I think I tweeted watching the game, you know, Syracuse defense really good or Notre Dame offense really bad. And I don't think it's either one. No. I think they're both just smashing into each other at a certain, you know, velocity, and the offense couldn't break through. And you're totally right about Garnsey being that guy. I think they're going to be hurt by not developing a guy to go with him.
Yeah.
And that's really what they need to work on going forward and going into more, you know, harder opponents and ACC play, is they need a second guy to initiate. And in the earlier in the season and last season, it was Perkovic, right?
Yeah.
Like, he would get that ball. I mean, he was the third man last season, but he should be the second guy. It seems like they don't really trust him to go one-on-one against a pole anymore.
Okay.
Did you get that feeling watching the game?
A little bit, because, you know, I feel like Sergio is still – there's still a lot for him to prove, I think, so far this season. If he didn't show up in, you know, in this game the when he did, it would have been a fairly, I would say, convincing Syracuse win. Because I feel like Syracuse was up by two at one point in the third quarter. And then, you know, Perkovic scored, and that kind of provided a little bit of an emotional uplift. And then, you know, Notre Dame managed to tie it. But I think so. I think you're right. I think there's a little bit of hesitation to trust him, because I think we saw in this game, too, that he had a really costly turnover. You know, he got onto the field. He got stripped almost immediately, and it went the other way.
I mean, it's not like he had Jordan Evans turnovers, but yeah. I mean, if we're looking at, like, a weak point in that Syracuse offense, like, I'm sorry. It's can't cough the ball up and not get the GB back, which happened a couple times to Evans. And that's when you saw – but to be fair, that's when you saw Mariano and Salcido kind of take charge of that ball.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that I saw in the fourth quarter, when things got really tense and Notre Dame actually changed their offense to score, was they stopped running their picks and cutters near the ball and moved them away. And Syracuse did a similar thing throughout the game, where they threw fader picks, which are, like, not fake picks, but picks that go in and then roll off away from the ball carrier, even if it's not totally towards goal. So you're opening up a lane and hopefully drawing your defenseman with you.
Okay.
And I think that messed up a lot of Notre Dame's slides. I really think it did. And they stepped into picks and then away from Dodgers. So when you do that, the defender has to make a choice. Is he going to defend the guy that might be open if he slides, or is it his slide? Like, a lot of things go through their mind. And the Notre Dame defense, I'm not saying they weren't prepared, but I think that there was a little bit of communication error on a couple of those really timely goals from the Orange in the fourth.
And kind of moving it down to that end, you know, and Notre Dame, you know, for a team that preaches, you know, team defense, Mariano sure did torch them when matched up against Shantz or Shorty. I thought it was incredible.
But that's what I'm referencing, though. Like, he torched him in the sense that he went one-on-one against the short stick and scored. By the way, if you play lacrosse, you should do that. if you know what I mean? Like, if you're a ball-carrying Dodger and you got a shorty on you, you should score on him, especially when your team goes to great lengths to give you a lane to run through to shoot. Like, it's not like Shantz did an awful job, dude. Like, that's the thing. Like, you're supposed to score. That's what you're supposed to do. You know, the rest of your defense has to bail you out. You have to acquiesce to the fact that you're probably going to get beat if you're a short stick on a ball carrier that's as good as Mariano. Like, that's just something you have to accept and adapt to. And I think that adaptation is something they tried. It just – the slide was late. Guy was too far away. They didn't switch. You know, and Doss for – at times was amazing in this game, by the way.
Yeah.
Do not shoot stick side pipe on Doss. That is like – I mean, I'm not like the biggest admirer of goalies. But the way he commands stick side of his pipe is very good. And Mariano didn't care. You know, they don't care. It's funny. Like, Salcido and Mariano, they do all these great things. And then you see Salcido take a really costly shot that was – like I said with him, he either sticks it and it looks amazing, or the ball just, like, goes nowhere near the net.
Yeah.
Like he had a shot that gave Notre Dame possession back in the fourth with, like, less than 3 minutes left that was really not super forgivable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's also – I think it was Solomon on the backup wasn't there. That backup has to be there on the opposite side of the cage. But, I mean, he took a rolled it up and kind of took it off the right elbow and like could have taken maybe one more step, but really just wanted to get his shot off so bad and was anticipating a quick slide. And that ball just like sailed and it sailed away from him. And I think that if Syracuse can kind of get the execution from him and Mariano and not just put it all on one or the other, and they can actually play more two man, they're going to be a lot improved. And it won't be one goal games. It'll be four goal games. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I think what I'm kind of trying to say is that I was, one, surprised how easy it was for him to get a short stick matchup. And then maybe, two, the lanes that he did have when he was going to cage. And then maybe three, is that the willingness by Notre Dame to kind of say, hey, we're going to let you dodge against our short stick. And not kind of like freak out in a way.
Right. Well, they can't all of a sudden not be Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know what I mean? Like, they're not jumping through a portal and coming out like ready to like throw one-on-one checks and stuff guys down the alley and not have a slide.
Yeah.
Like, that's how they play. They're not going to change that part of their team philosophy just to play Syracuse. Mm-hmm. They're just not. And by the way, it's a one goal game. We're talking about this like it's a 10 goal game. It's a one goal game. I thought they lost it when they called the timeout as the guy was dodging to the. I'm going to say this. Like, and I've been hit with this as a bad take. That's fine. I'll take my bad takes. My average is good enough. Okay? Listen, the guy is carrying the ball. I think, and I don't think it was Perkovic. I think it was. I can't remember off the top of my head, but he beats the first guy on the slow break. He's running towards the cage. Timeout.
Yeah. Can't do that.
No trust.
And it's funny because we've talked about this in the past, how Syracuse tends to trust their players in that situation. And you see a guy basically bearing down upon goal, and that's when you want to call timeout.
Come on, man. I've done it. It's an easy thing to do, especially if you're in the ref's ear and, you know, he's not listening, or like you're screaming at him and he like, you know, as refs are wont to do.
Yeah.
Calls it a little late, or, you know, looks over to make sure you're making a signal or something like that. Like, maybe that happened. I don't know. I didn't see the sideline of that play. But I just thought it was like, ooh.
Mm, yeah.
You want that back. You want that. And you know what? Syracuse did that like 2 weeks ago. So, you know, it's not like it's a very common thing that happens in lacrosse games. It's just something that like struck me in the moment.
Absolutely. So one of my big takeaways from this game is that I feel like the duo of Mariano and Salcido is this team's strength, but I feel like that's also their weakness. I mean, if those guys get shut down, you know, who else steps up? I mean, you talked about Jordan Evans at attack. I think for me really is that I see a really ineffective attack overall. I feel like all of those guys are off-ball finishers. They're not exceptionally adept at setting up their own shot, beating their man, and scoring an individual dodging.
I think Bomberry can do it. I mean, he's not necessarily playing a lot of attack, but I think Bomberry's a guy that can take his guy occasionally, especially if it's a shorty. I like Nate Solomon a lot.
Yeah,
I just think he needs to develop the ability to break that invisible wall at GLE.
Yeah,
I feel he's getting there. It's not like it's not going to happen. I mean, it's just not happening yet.
Yeah, I mean, he is only a sophomore, so I think we should give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. I thought he played fantastic in this game, finishing mostly off of Salcido's kind of feeds. But, you know, I just feel like in a big game down the stretch in April and May, I feel like you're going to see teams try to cancel out, you know, the play of Mariano and Salcido. And I think that there's going to be a game where you're going to need attackmen to step up, and I'm not sure who it's going to be. I feel like they're utilizing Bomberry mostly as an inside finisher. Every time I see him on the field, he's on the crease, like, give me the ball. I'm like, I feel like your talents could be utilized elsewhere, bud.
Yeah, they play Bomberry like, and this is going to be a throwback reference. Sorry for this, people that are newer to lacrosse. He's playing Matt Posque high crease lacrosse.
Yeah.
He's kind of floating in that high crease and making quick cuts to the ball when the ball's behind to get catch and finishes, or fading off when the ball's on the wing and then cutting across with a C cut over the top of a pick, or sometimes – not a lot. Sometimes underneath to get his hands free and finish the ball. But let me – okay, so your criticism of this team – Let me get this straight. Offense. I'm not trying to pick on you, but let me get this straight.
No, go ahead.
The criticism of Syracuse is that they have two Dodgers that can initiate, pass, and finish. And your criticism of Notre Dame is they have one.
Yeah.
What team has three? What team has three in the country? I want to know. I can't think of one. I mean, you're going to say UVA, but I think you're wrong.
Okay. I think UVA. I think Maryland. I think possibly Hopkins.
Name the three on Maryland. What is it? Bernhardt,
Kelly, Rambo, and Heacock.
Rambo's not – no.
Yes,
no.
He can because he can bulldog.
That is such – that is not – yeah, but that's not initiating. Initiating is beating your guy clean and not working for your own shot. And he is better at being that second key man and hitting that skip pass. I mean, not so much, you know, until this week, but – he's great at being the second guy on the pass, but I don't think he's a quote-unquote initiator. I don't think he can dust a guy and have his head up, right? He's beating a guy to score. I think that, you know, Mariano used to do that a lot more, and Salcido's actually doing it more for Syracuse, whereas Mariano's looking to pass. And so is Salcido, but I think that those two guys, you know, when you watch them, the evolution of them to their point is they've never played better lacrosse than they play right now.
That's fair.
Right?
I think that's a totally fair assessment across the board. One thing we got to mention before we move on is I got to say it, man. I think Evan Molloy might be the best goalie in the ACC right now. Because I feel like, you know, he doesn't let in the ones that shouldn't happen, I feel like. And to me, that's the mark of a good goalie, especially when you're playing in the ACC.
Yeah, and I got tripped real hard by IO publisher Jerry Foy when he made that high stop to save the game, man. Because I've been saying all along he's a little weak high. I don't think I'm wrong still. One save doesn't redeem the dozen or so times I've seen balls go in very high on him.
Yeah.
And they're good shots. Like, that's the thing. Like, no goalie's perfect. Like, yeah. They're not going to make every shot. Every goalie has a weakness. Every goalie has something they hate, a shot they hate dealing with. And every goalie that's like, this is such the fake goalie answer. If you talk to goalies, they're like, oh yeah, I really hate off-stick hip. Who shoots off-stick hip? Get out of my face with that. That's such garbage. Goalies, I've figured you out. Yeah. Give me a break. No one shoots off-stick hip. No one tries.
Yeah.
It's not sexy to score off-stick hip. You know, put that ball in the corner. That's what everyone wants.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think you're wrong, but I feel like that's not a high bar because I don't think the goalies in the ACC are any of the top five goalies in the nation.
No, and that's
– maybe
that's,
top 10. Maybe top 10.
Yeah.
Not top five.
Which is very interesting. When you look at all the guys we're considering for All-American goalies, they are outside of the ACC and even the Big Ten maybe. But – one thing to wrap this up, kind of, when I went to the Syracuse Hopkins game, I was in the press conference with the Syracuse players, and Evan Molloy and Mariano were there. And you can just tell that they've got that cold-blooded streak to them. You know, they've got that Black Mamba Kobe Bryant kind of fire in their eye where they're like, you know what? Yeah, we survived these close games because we're cold-blooded.
One, of course they do. Two, we don't make Kobe Bryant references in this pod.
All right. All right. Before we move on to the second half of our podcast, we got to give a shout out to our sponsor, Sideline Swap. Kyle, what's your Sideline Swap product fiction today?
Oh, man. Let me tell you guys a story of a young boy searching for his perfect head. I play with a lot of heads. I play with everything that comes out. It's kind of part of my job. I'm a gear nerd. That's what I do. It's a lot of fun. I got to say, my favorite head to come out, new head to come out in the last 5 years, is the Maverick Centric. I've said this before. I'll say it again. It's just the perfect head for me. I get if you don't like it. That's fine. There's a lot of my head is best. That head sucks going on in lacrosse. I don't ascribe to it. I think It's a very personal thing, and I think it's one of the cool things about lacrosse is you can form personal relationships with pieces of plastic. I think that's cool. I mean, maybe that's weird, but I think it's cool. You go on Sideline Swap right now. They have a really – I want to just focus on this one. An adrenaline-dyed Maverick-centric U with like a web spray fade all green from like a nice cool like Kelly green into a deep forest. $45. $45. I'm in. You had me at centric, but I'm still in. I love this head. It's my baby, my sweetness, my current weapon of choice. I did an entire series of dyes on a bunch of centrics that Maverick sent us, and I taped them and had an entire discussion on why I like the head and the different dye designs that we put on them. Right now I have a Kanye West. I'm going to show this to Dan on the pod here. Let me pull this up. Little Kanye West. I miss the old Kanye. Everything he's doing now is kind of garbage. He's kind of a garbage person, like Kobe Bryant. But I really like the old Kanye. And, you know, it's got a lot of personalized stuff on it. I love the centric. Dyes up great. Strings even better. Perfect mid-pocket. Perfect mid-head. Get it now on SidelineSwap.com.
Yeah. Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more. We're snagging unique gear from colleges and the pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely. List in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit SidelineSwap.com today to get started. That's SidelineSWAP.com. All right, Kyle, moving on to the first edition of Sunday Evenings with A-Burn. We had two primetime games last – he's shaking his head. We had two primetime games last night. Both were very good matchups and had a lot of particular fallout within their conference. The first one we're going to talk about is the reason why Penn State is number one as of this Monday morning. Penn State defeating in-conference foe Ohio State 9-4. Penn State with the absolute knockout punch in the second half. They were only up 4-3, and then they just blew the doors open in the second half.
First things first, you don't own Sunday night. You're not HBO. Okay, I get it. You love Sunday night. Sunday night games are about to become a huge thing in lacrosse, guys. Like, we have great matchups this weekend and next weekend and every weekend continuously through. This result does not surprise me because one of the overarching themes of this season, I think, is that offense is good. Offense wins you games. Everyone is obsessed with defense. And let me tell you something. Ohio State has a great defense. Penn State does not, but Penn State's offense is amazing. And to see it go against what I would consider a top 10 defense in Ohio State and poke at them and prod at them and look for openings, that explosion in the second half was not a surprise because that's what Penn State does. Arcieri gets you possessions at the X, and with possessions come opportunities. And even if they're not scoring on the opportunities, Penn State, they're like a raptor. They're learning. They're learning. They're testing the fence for weaknesses. Clever girl. They're going to score. Yeah. And they did.
I mean, yeah, I think Ohio State, you know, they played as good defensively as they could because, you know, Penn State was just strangling them with possession in the second half. Like, this is a team that casually gets to 12 and 15 goals. 9 goals is not so bad. But you said Penn State doesn't have a good defense. Their whole body of work would suggest that, but in this game, their defense came to play. The freshman keeper, Colby Canise, was excellent. 13 saves.
Yeah.
Sabia was awesome.
That's true. Sabia is their best player on defense. Yeah.
3 calls turnovers, and I didn't even realize this until after the game, But Ohio State only scored one real goal in a 6-on-6 situation, and that was the last goal they scored when Trey LeCaire just decided to sweep across the top of the box and shoot on the run. I mean, the other ones were transition goals or that weird goal where, you know, Trey LeClaire was at the right place at the right time for an easy kind of like rebound score. You know, Penn State dominated this game on their end.
Yes, but didn't Ohio State have similar stats against a Notre Dame defense last week, right? And yes, Notre Dame's defense is way better than Penn State's. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's a trend for Ohio that when they can't get the ball, they try to bleed it, and they don't have that kind of offense. I just think they have an offense that needs to take its chances at every turn to score. You know, like you're saying, there's only one real, quote unquote, real goal here. You know, against Notre Dame was the same way. There was only two real goals in the six, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're having trouble scoring in the six against Notre Dame and Penn State, you're probably like every other team, you know, in the NCAA. Unfortunately, you're Ohio State, and you need to beat Penn State at some point to get to where you want to go. And you have to do it with offense. You can't just rely on your defense to do anything. And the thing is with Penn State, Sabia is excellent. I here's the thing with me and Penn State. I have them three this week, and people think I'm crazy. And it's actually from watching them play in person.
Okay.
Because I think that they are very good. I think that they might be great. But when I saw them play Harvard, Harvard beat them up in the middle of the field. Harvard threw punches at them in the middle of the field, you know, metaphorical, not literal, and, you know, contested every ball and played tight defense and played their pace, right? And Colby Keith and Chris Sabia are the ones that won that game for Penn State. It wasn't the offense that won that game for them.
No.
You know what I mean? And I think that that's something that, that we're looking at. Like you said, I said it earlier. Penn State doesn't have a great defense. They still have guys playing defense. It's not like there's like invisible people out there. You know what I mean? Like they still have guys that are trying really well. And I think Sabia is a big dude. First of all, he's got good handles. You know, he scored a goal at the end of that Harvard game that I watched. That was a full field run from him and just stuck it on Robert Shaw from distance. He has great footwork, and when he throws checks, there's defenders that throw checks that try to dislodge the ball. There's defenders that throw checks that try to annoy guys. He's throwing a check to let you know that his name is Chris Sabia. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what he's doing. And when you have a guy like that, the rest of the defense can kind of fall in line and, you know, support that and play a little rough, play a little tough. And I think that Ohio State, when that happened, you know, they didn't have an answer. You know, when you're an offense and you play against a defense that's bullying you up and has a great goalie that's stopping your shots, you need to answer with something different. And I think that for all the times that we've seen Ohio State kind of evolve as an offense, they do tend to sputter out at points. And this, you know, this was a sputter out game. And so was Notre Dame. I still think they're actually really good. I have them in my top 10. They're 10, but I still think they're a good team. I think Penn State's a good team teetering on great. I just feel like they're in for playing a team, and we were in on them early, right? Like you and I, we were in on Penn State early.
Yeah.
I think people probably think it's crazy I don't have them at 1 because they're 10-0. I want to see them beat somebody that really impresses me, and I want to see them do it with a lot of goals.
Okay.
Which probably doesn't make sense because I have Syracuse as number 1. I just think Syracuse's schedule is way tougher than Penn State's. And let's be real, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's a crazy crazy thing to say. But, you know, again, we're looking at a guy like Mac O'Keefe for Penn State, too, offensively. I think my thing about O'Keefe is I actually – not that I've figured him out, but I figured out the one thing that he does that sets him apart is he explodes off ball. Right? He wants to make cuts. He wants to set picks. He wants to get to space. He wants to earn his time with the ball. I don't remember a freshman ever that worked as hard to get the ball as Mac O'Keefe.
That's an interesting point. You're definitely right, though, because I feel like you watched that one goal that he had last night where he explodes to that space, and then the ball is literally in his stick for half a second, and then it's in the goal.
Yep.
But he's so excited for that half a second.
Yeah, he's a worker, man, and Penn State produces workers.
Yeah.
He's very much – he reminds me a lot of Matt McCreadys, also Penn State grad, in that he is relentless in pursuing the ball and working for his team and playing his role.
Yeah.
Great player to watch. Definitely one of the differences in the game. But let's not discount Colby Knies. He's a very underrated goalkeeper.
Yes, he had a great game. Analyzing the Ohio State offense, though, in this one, I feel like, you know, when I've watched the Buckeyes, at least the good teams that have emerged from the past few years, this is very much an offense that thrives when they have a lead and when they dictate their own pace. And what we saw in this game was the complete antithesis of that. You know, even though they had the possession advantage, they just couldn't can it early. And then the game before they could, the game was away from them.
Yeah, they're not a team built to come back.
Yeah.
Right? We've talked about teams that are UVA, Syracuse, a couple of these freeze, you know, Albany, even though no one's even had to put them to the sword yet, except for Syracuse. I think that if Ohio State can't build that lead and grind, and they're a team that's built on grinding, they're a grinding team.
Yeah.
They need to have the lead to play that style, or at least have the game be close. And when Penn State, I think, scored their seventh goal. It was effectively over.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I agree with you 100%. I feel like don't let all these, you know, Ohio State is scoring in transition kind of narratives fool you. This is a team that loves to slow it down and grind it out.
Again, scoring in transition is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Scoring transition is the deadbeat dad paying his child support of lacrosse. Okay? Like, you're supposed to do that. You don't get a parade. You don't get one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. Let's move on to the second contest of Sunday night. Duke 12, North Carolina 8. My first point on this game, the return of Ball Watch City.
Slides never came, Dan. The slides never came.
Yes, it was a horror movie if you were a fan of off-ball defense. But you know, this was an interesting game. Carolina was up 6-1 at one point, and I remember telling my dad this, or at least, you know, some other people who were watching the game said, "I think I've seen Duke come back and beat Carolina from like a 10-goal deficit." You know, this game is far from over, and that's how it played out. You know, they kept nudging away, before just absolutely taking the game in their own hands and strangling it out of Carolina's in the fourth quarter with 5 unanswered goals. Just wow.
Yeah, the much vaunted UNC offense failing to reach 10 goals again, right?
Yeah.
Again, despite Mr. Cloutier.
Yeah,
showing up with his briefcase and going to work.
I mean, yeah, we mentioned this on the last podcast, but this offense really, really misses Pontrello. They need a guy who can initiate and set up his own shot, and they just don't have it this year. And when you look at, you know, Carolina's, you know, results on paper, it's not so great. You know, they're not scoring double-digit goals against quality teams. The only team that they've scored double-digit goals on that is a quality team is Denver, in which they scored 13. And that's also their only quality win.
Yeah, they're in trouble. If they're trying to make an NCAA tournament, defend the belt, they're in big trouble.
I think they're in dire straits. You know, my dad, Carolina alumni, I was talking to him after the game last night because he watched it, and he said, "I don't think Carolina will win a game the rest of the year." And I said, "Oh, come on." But then I look at their schedule. You know who they got on their schedule? They got 3 games. Virginia, Syracuse, Notre Dame. And right now, I don't see them beating any of those teams.
No, if they played like they played against Duke. I mean, that was a tale of two halves, right?
Yeah.
Like UNC playing really well in the first half, kind of letting Duke back in, you know, opening the back door a little bit. and then just getting blown out. You know, I mean, 12-8 is not a blowout win, but like in terms of momentum of the game, it seemed like they just didn't even have time to do anything with the ball.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think this is more – listen, we've talked about UNC enough, I feel. I said this last week, they got to get a win to get back in the conversation. And here we are talking about them again. I think we got to talk about Duke.
Yeah.
Because Duke – I said that about Duke too, really early. They had two early losses. And I thought they looked great in the Syracuse game despite losing.
Oh, yeah. I was impressed with both teams in that game.
Yeah. And I think they looked great in this game. So I think it's time to welcome them back into the top 10 with ease. I think they're one of the top 10 teams in the country.
No, I agree. And I think what's interesting is that we've seen the evolution of their defense. And we saw, you know, a micro evolution of their defense in this game. They were sloppy to start the game, and then they just gradually got better. And I'm just continuously impressed with how that unit kind of continues to grow. I feel like, you know, they complement the style that is Danny Fowler's, you know, goalkeeping style very well.
Right. And, you know, defensively, it's tough to give up. I mean, a lot of those UNC goals were tough goals early.
Yeah.
Right? And they kept scoring them. But when you keep taking tough shots, eventually that's going to catch up with you. Right? You want to have a nice mixture of tough shots, distant shots, in-close shots, layups. You know, you win in the NBA with layups and three-pointers, yeah. Right? You don't win with the really hard work guy runs off of two screens jump shot, you know. Yeah. Rip Hamilton is and Reggie Miller are not great players anymore in the eyes of a lot of people in the NBA. So in the way that translates to lacrosse is they're, you know, Duke doesn't have a ton of guys that take, you know, I almost said dumb shots. I don't mean dumb. Inopportune. Yeah. Against the run of play shots, right? They don't have a ton of those guys because Duke plays smart lacrosse. They know when to speed up and when to slow down. And when they also know when to ride the hot hand. And I think that's a very underrated skill in terms of a coaching staff and a player knowledge base of players that are on the field. They know when to feed Gooderding. They know when to get Bruckner the ball. They know that guy is going to do something great when he touches it and he gets his touches. And, you know, you have a note in here. Gooderding really is a top player. And as someone that, you know, I'm evaluating a lot of talent, we're going into the MLL season real quick. I got to acquiesce, man. You're right. But he's getting it done. Gooderding getting it Gooder done.
Get it Gooder done. But yeah, I mean, he's a top player, and I feel like I can't really pinpoint why, because he's not, you know, especially, you know, flashy athlete. I think he's just really good at finding his chances and sticking it, which at the end of the day is all that really counts.
He's smart. That's why he's good. He's a smart player that operates in a very, by the way, very limited circle around the net. It's just he knows how to get free. He knows how to make double moves and have his defender kind of bite on a pick. He knows how to get one step and ball out or no step, ball out. And that's a very underrated skill. It's an underrated skill. The intelligence of being able to develop the rest of your offense with you getting the ball when you're playing a team like, you know, Ball Watch City, that's a guy that's going to score a lot of goals and going to set up a lot of goals because he's not necessarily probing. He's just doing his job and swinging the ball to where it needs to be and then making a move. If you watch him, he doesn't stop moving. You know, that. Then we were talking about Mac O'Keefe earlier. That's what Mac O'Keefe does. He doesn't stop moving. You know, a lot of lacrosse players stand and watch the ball a lot. They stand and they wave their stick and give me the ball. I have never seen Gooderding do that. Do you know what I mean? He knows that he has to work. And when you're a guy that's probably been told you're not a great athlete your entire career, maybe it's not that you believe it. It's that, well, all right, well, fine. I'll find another way to score. There's a million different ways to score in lacrosse, and he's one of the guys that has found that intangible area around the goal mouth where catch and finish, set a pick, roll off a pick, be smart, keep moving. You're going to get the ball. That trust that he's going to get the ball, he's developed that into a style of lacrosse that's very great for Duke, and maybe doesn't make a ton of sense to people that are watching him and going, well, he's not beating his guy. Like, no kidding, dude. Like, tons of guys don't beat their
ass. Yeah, but he's still scoring, like, 4 goals a game.
Exactly. Exactly. Or he's catching it because his defenseman is wrong-footed because of something he did.
Yeah.
Right? That's such an underrated thing, and it just means he's a super smart cross player.
Absolutely. But I do look at Duke, and I see kind of a similar situation with Syracuse where, you know, they've got the guys who they know they can lean on, but what happens when those guys have a bad game? I don't see a whole lot of depth, or even worse probably, is experience on the offensive end for Duke. So my question is that to them is, when they do run up against a good defensive team like a Notre Dame, who they're playing next week, how do they respond if some of their guys get taken out?
I think they're going to try and outthink them and beat them with team offense. That's what Duke has learned this year. I think that's how they've made their kind of resurgence, is their ability to assess and adapt. And I think against a team like Notre Dame, we saw Syracuse kind of do that. They dictate the Notre Dame defense. The Notre Dame defense is very different from a lot of defenses on the cross in that they want to dictate what you do. They're not reactionary. Okay? Yeah. They're not the French Revolution. Okay, they're not reacting to things. They're trying to set the places where you are going to go to places you don't want to go. That's what a good defense does. They make you uncomfortable. And I think that Duke is going to have to overcome the ability that Notre Dame has to make offenses uncomfortable and beat them with ball movement, game planning, a lot of off-ball stuff. Because that's how you have to beat a team like Notre Dame, and a team that has a great defense.
Yes. All right. We've talked about an hour, so let's move into some segments. We've got some great weird watches of the week. Kyle, you want to go first or should I go first?
I'll go first. I mentioned this earlier. It's almost MLL time, man.
He's excited.
I watched some old MLL tape. I got some old games on my DVR. Just fired them up. I know, like, I watch lacrosse all day, every day, but I got a special place in my heart for the pros, man, and we're almost there. MLL Draft Watch, even though they haven't announced where the draft is. MLL hasn't announced it, but it's going to happen. So we're going to, you know, Chris Rosenthal, the other MLL resident guy, we're going to try and convert Dan. We're going to start an MLL podcast. We kind of announced that this week by accident. Dan's going to be the strong man of producers in the IL office, kind of going to wrangle me and Rosie, which he already wrangles me. I don't know how he's going to wrangle Rosie too. Yeah, we're going to set that up. We're going to start looking at players that are seniors, and we're going to kind of have like a stock watch, a little draft watch, to get you guys ready for when the MLL draft happens on NCAA championship weekend at Gillette. That was my weird watch. I just played a couple old MLL games. Like, oh yeah, I remember. I love MLL.
I remember.
So the other thing I watched was Hofstra St. John's. Those of you that have seen my top 10 this week that I put on Twitter, Hofstra's pretty low in that top 10, I think. And the reason for that is this St. John's game, which I watched on a stream. Hofstra's good, man. They're really good. They're a top 10 team. They're undefeated. I don't think they're going to stay that way, because of how they played in this St. John's game, where it was kind of like a lackluster win. It was a walkie win. You know, they were just kind of getting to spots and shooting. And, you know, they rely on Concannon, their goal scorer, or their goalkeeper, for a lot of their success. Yeah. And when you rely on your goalkeeper that much, that's a bend don't break thing. But eventually that goalie breaks. Eventually that happens because, you know, the laws of lacrosse offense dictate that eventually a goalie will not save, you know, 65 or 70% of the shots in a game. And I think that's coming for Hofstra. I still think they're very good. They're great on offense. They're actually really good in the six. And I think that's the strength of the team and how they've gotten to as many wins and how they're still undefeated. But man, watching this game, they didn't even score 10 goals. It was 9-6, so it was kind of pukey, a little bit of a pukey win.
Okay, that's fair. My weird watch of the week was once again a weird listen of the week, but it was actually another podcast on the Inside Lacrosse collection of podcasts. It was the D Fly and Dixie podcast from last week, And it actually got into the best part was a heated discussion about, you know, the top three American bands in each, you know, D-Fly and Dixie's perspective. And I just want to say, I'm Team Dixie, man. Dixie, my boy, hit up one of my favorite bands, Metallica. I'm just going to say it right now. Metallica rules. Sorry, D-Fly and Matt Kinnear. But Pearl Jam drools. I'm sorry, I don't get the Pearl Jam love, man. I think they got two, maybe three songs at best, and that's it. I'm all sorry. Right,
that's
I'm
not
sorry.
That's not true. Take that back. That's not true. Two or three songs? Get out of here, millennial. I don't want to hear it. Yeah. No, that's not true. They have more than that. I don't know. I'm not a big music guy anymore. It's not a big part of my life, so I'm not really going to get into that argument, but I definitely have my favorites from both bands. So.
All right, moving on to Movers and Shakers. I actually kind of felt like this was a little bit of a quiet week, Shakers-wise, but I'm on the train, man. Binghamton, not a real animal. Bearcats, they're in there, man. I think they were.
Oh, you're with me? I'm on the train?
I'm with you now. 19, woo! I think I put them.
Yeah, they deserve to be in the top 20. As crazy as that may be, they've got some real tough games coming up. They're playing Houston, Albany.
Yeah.
Kind of tough there, but – you know, and they lost to Marist, a team that has our boy JD the Rancor Recor on it, kind of fallen off a cliff the last couple weeks in terms of wins and losses. But that's like kind of an ominous sign for Binghamton. But Binghamton keeps winning, man. Yeah. You just win, baby. Keep winning. They're legit, as they can be.
I think my biggest mover was actually Rutgers. I think, you know, they went from like a top 10 team out of the top 10. Like you said, Duke moved into the top 10. And then I think that Villanova is back. You know, they had a very rough start to the season, but, you know, they beat Maryland and they keep coming away with some pretty convincing victories. So they're back in my top 20.
100%. I wanted to ask you, you know, you were a little suspiciously silent there during my Hofstra rant. What's your read on them? What do you think?
So I think Hofstra is a team that is in my top 10, but they went down in my top 10. I think I had them at 3 or 4, and I think I moved them down to 8 or 9 because of what you mentioned. You kind of a lackluster win against St. John's.
I mean, is that what we're doing, though? Lackluster wins, lackluster losses?
I think that seems to be the theme of the season almost, because I feel like a lot of people will still say, oh, Penn State, whole bunch of lackluster wins. It's 10-0, but it's a crappy 10-0. And I'm like, who cares?
Right. So why don't you say that for Hofstra, though?
I don't know, because I feel like, for me, last night's victory by Penn State solidified an argument for them to be number one. Do I think that Penn State goes to Maryland and gets beat by Maryland next week? Absolutely. I'm sorry. That's what I think. Because Maryland's on the rebound.
Yeah, well, they smoked a Michigan team pretty easily. Another Big Ten opponent. Let's jump into the scoreboard rebound.
Okay.
Rebound rundown. Virginia 8, Richmond 7. Give me your takes on this.
So did you see any of this game?
I saw none of this game.
Okay. This was just an unreal game, I thought. So Virginia.
An 8-7 game was an unreal game.
Yeah. Because of the way it
who
played
is,
out.
Is this Dan Abern? Who is this?
This is Dan. Who is this? This is Dan.
This is Dan Abern? Okay.
So I think Virginia scored the first 4 goals of the game, and you immediately said at that point, oh, man, Lars has got him. They're going to play his style the whole game, and Richmond's going to have to run with Virginia. And then the Cavs just got absolutely outplayed in the middle of this game. They got smoked on the defensive end for maybe 30-plus minutes. And the Hoos had to come back and find a way to win. Jared Connors scoring the game-winning goal in less than a minute. And LSM, who scored the first goal of the game and the final goal of the game, he's just a freshman. But, yeah, you're shaking your head. But it was an interesting result. I really do think that this might be a salvaging win for Virginia, because I felt like if they lost this game, I think maybe some guys mentally would have packed some bags. Said, you know what, dang, maybe we really aren't a good team. But I feel like this could be a win that Lars can build on going down into the ACC stretch.
Can you bleep me? Okay. I'm asking you. Can you bleep me?
I can bleep you.
Dan, that's bullshit.
What?
That they're going to mentally pack their bags. Get out of here with that. Don't say that. Like, I agree. Never say that about players, man. That's not okay. That's like, again, we're trying to bring you guys something that's a little different than like what you're going to hear on like, you know, sport talk radio, which, by the way, I grew up with up here in New England, and it's awful. These people are awful. All they do is attack other players. We don't want to attack. We want to enrich the experience for you guys watching the game. I don't think that's true. I think this is a big win for them. I'll agree with you on that. But yeah, I'm not buying that. I think Virginia's a threat, man. They're threatening. They're in the corner of the party, just waiting for their chance, sharpening their knives.
I mean, that's the thing, is that I feel like going forward, I feel like Virginia is in a similar spot that Carolina was last year, where maybe they don't have as many impressive wins as you want, but they are in a position to strike. You know, they've got a very senior-laden team that could pay off against in big games against Duke and North Carolina. I think I see Virginia getting to the ACC tournament, man. And from there, it's a whole new ballgame.
Yeah, and I think this is a game where they learned a lot, because Richmond is a very good team and stayed in my top 20, despite this loss.
I mean, this is the first team to hold Virginia to single-digit goals the whole year. I mean, they had this team on the ropes at one point in this game. I was like, wow, maybe Richmond is really, really legit. And I still think they are. Yeah. All right, next game, an interesting scoreline. Princeton 21, Brown 11. Michael Sowers with 5 goals and 4 assists. Woohoo!
Just dropping 9 spots like it's nothing.
Yeah, man.
Like it's nothing.
The kid is legit, man. I gotta say, after this game and after what I saw last week against Yale, I think that this is now a 2-horse race in the Ivy League between Princeton and Yale. I think we're gonna see a rematch in the Ivy League tournament. Those are the only two teams that are, you know, putting in convincing wins. Penn's dropped off a little bit with the way they've been playing lately. I think it's a 2-horse race.
You think it's Princeton, Yale?
Princeton, yeah. Because Yale had that rough start. They've managed to rebound. It looks like Reeves is kind of getting to that 100% healthy level. Mm-hmm. And his play is starting to reflect that.
I think a team you got to watch there, you know, it's not on the scoreboard rundown, but, you know, Harvard played Albany pretty tight, man. Pretty tight.
Yeah.
Right?
I think I look at Harvard and I say, hey, you know, they've got a respectable body of work. It's just that they got, you know, they had a pretty convincing loss to Brown, which is what, you know, confiscates this kind of whole picture for me. And that's why I say that Princeton and Yale are kind of like the teams to beat in the Ivy League, because I feel like they're the most consistent teams.
Yeah. And you know, Princeton's consistent in the way that they score goals more so than Yale.
Yeah.
More so than Yale. I think they're a little streakier, but I think Princeton's ability to score sets them apart and makes them the one. I think they're the number one team in the Ivy just because they can score. And all the Yaleys out there are going to get really upset that I said that, but your team still struggles to score, guys. And Princeton just put up 21.
Another result, an interesting one in the Patriot League. Army 11, Bucknell 10. You know, Army nips a surging Bucknell team. Is Army the team to beat in the Patriot League? I feel like this is their league now.
I feel like this answer changes, though, every weekend.
That is the
thing. Yes. But, you know, this game, I was scoring this game. I didn't watch it. But watching how the progression of the goals went, it seemed like Army had control the entire time. It's just that Bucknell chips at you, and runs shorty two-man behind the cage at you until your defense breaks. And the Army defense didn't really break. I mean, they let him back in the fourth a little bit. I think this game was in their control for most of it. You actually did a Facebook Live with Terry Foy on Friday. That was also on Instagram, and I jumped onto that, and people were throwing questions at me. Yeah. And a lot of them were about Army. Like, is Army legit? I think Army is a legit top 10 team. I think they are the favorite in the Patriot League this week, especially with, you know, another BU loss. But I want to see them kill a team, right?
Yeah.
I want to see them absolutely just outscore a team by 5-plus goals before I anoint them as the best team in the Patriot League. Does that make sense?
That definitely makes sense. Speaking of killing teams, Albany 19, Stony Brook 11. Albany just continues to beat teams up. I got to say, this has to be, you know, the best offense in the country. And they're backing it up this year with TD Ireland, who's just been amazing.
100%. Killing people on draws, dominating possession, sticking. But if you looked at an Albany game, just the game, just a straight game with just goals, and you watch all their goals, you'd think it was a highlight reel for a team for like an entire season.
Yes.
Like, they score wild goals. Backhanders, like one-handed no looks. I mean, full on like 360 turnaround shots. Like, this team does not care. They do not care. They are going to score, and they're going to do it and make it look good. Make it look good.
No, I agree. That's what I said. I was like, I was really excited to tune to that Albany game versus Harvard on Wednesday. He's like, oh yeah, I can't wait to see five casual behind the back goals, you know?
Yeah, they're I think they're at the top of my, them and Syracuse, I think, are at the top of my fun to watch team list.
Okay.
They're just so much fun. It's just, it's great. It's like, oh, he won another faceoff. Oh my God, he's going to score again. You know, it's like, it's exciting. It's everything that lacrosse should be, is what Albany is. I'm afraid about what happens when they play a team that can kind of control Ireland and control fields like Syracuse did. That's how Syracuse beat them. And slow it down. Because you know what my dream matchup is, actually, now that I think about it? I want to see UVA Albany.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
How insane. And then maybe like a mixed tag team match with Brown just popping in for like a quarter to like let a team rest up.
Guest appearance by Dylan Malloy.
Yeah, just a little cameo from Dylan Malloy, you know? just rolling in it, scoring his own, like, if you can do this, I can do it better kind of thing, little competition. Albany definitely wins like a trick goal shot competition against anyone else in the country.
Yeah.
They're awesome, man. They're a lot of fun to watch. I've had them consistently in my top five all year. Check the math on that. I feel good about it.
Yeah. Speaking of math, Connor Fields with eight points in this game. He is on pace to surpass Lyle Thompson's single season scoring record, which is insane. I think he's a legit Tourton finalist at this point, probably the front runner right now. Just a fun team to watch, and I'm really looking forward to that Albany-Maryland game that's going to be played on April 12th, a midweek game. You know, that's got to be the midweek game of the year.
It better be.
Yeah.
It better be. What we're talking about, a team that can kind of bleed them a little bit. There's no way Maryland's going to run with them.
Exactly. So that's going to be an interesting kind of clash of styles.
Absolute style makes fights kind of game. Yeah, and as far as Fields, here's the interesting thing that I find watching Fields play. He is just as fast side to side as he is front to back.
Yeah.
Which I can count, like, the only other guy that pops to mind that's still playing that's like that is probably like Jordan Wolfe.
Okay.
Like, that's the kind of speed that Fields has. And people are like, oh, how's he getting all these points? He dusts the first guy and then the second guy. And then he's looking to pass. That's the thing about him. He's not always dodging for his own shot. But when he takes it, he knows it's going in.
Yeah.
He's not a volume shooter, right? He's an absolute MVP-level playmaker scorer. He's a complete package offensively. He just is. And it's great to watch him play. I love watching him play with, like, Bennett Drake. And Bennett Drake just like, well, I'm going to shoot between the legs. You know, like, they're just a lot of fun to watch. And Albany's a great team, man. I hope that we get big things from them in the NCAA tournament. Because I think they're making it, no matter what.
Yes. All right, folks, that's all we have for you today. Like we said, I think that April is going to prove to be the gauntlet of this season. And I cannot wait for more conference play. We got a huge in-conference weekend next weekend. That one's going to be great. Make sure you guys listen in to that version of In the Crease, which will be in person, it looks like.
Ooh, yeah.
Booyah.
Coming down to Bmore. Get my reps in.
But yes, if you like the podcast, please tell a friend, please subscribe, and also please send us feedback. Please send us topics or suggestions. You can follow me on Twitter at DanAburn2423.
You can follow me. My name is Kyle Devitt. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside the Cross at the Kyle Devitt, THEKYLEDEVITT. Don't forget the E on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks for listening, guys. Talk to you later. Inside the Cross Podcast.